So these seemingly draconian injunctions from Paul have to be seen against the context of Paul's expectation that the end was going to come. You know? Which certainly, if you do think about it, if you think, 45 minutes from now, God's going to send Jesus back and it's going to be all over. We would probably erect a different set of priorities. At least I would. I would need to. So it is, it is not so harsh and demanding as it seems on first reading. Okay, again, this passage from Mark, like much of the New Testament, is a tantalizing invitation to try to figure out what's going on here. Authority, the word comes up a couple times in this reading. Jesus is an authoritative figure. So I'd just like to spend a little time talking about authority, the nature of authority. I mean, if somebody walked in this room with a pointed hat and an amethyst ring, I'd say, oh, there's an authority figure with most reverend in front of his name, a little cross outside the end of his name. That's the bishop. Or if a cop came in with his nice blue uniform and a gun on his hip, that's an authority. And I think we can go through, you enter a classroom, my God in heaven, if there's a place where authority is most overt and easily exercised, having taught for 45 years or better, the intimidating power of being behind a desk is almost unlimited. You can scare the wits out of people with virtually no effort. You're going to flunk this course. Oh my God. But there's something awry, I think, seriously awry in those things. So a title, the uniform, status, blah, 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 blah. To which we normally ascribe authority is wrong. Jesus didn't come in, with a bunch of guys carrying him on a chair with a pointed hat and say, all right, I'm here now, boys. This is what's going to happen. Jesus was a peasant in the rural section of Palestine, Galilee. They called him hillbillies, the people from. If a hillbilly came in here, a real-life hillbilly, and said, I'm authoritative, I would be very surprised. It'd be highly unlikely. So what's the problem with our normal construction of an idea of authority? They're all extrinsic to us. They're all external to us. And therefore, to some degree or another, they're all alienative of who we really are. And that's a simple case. They divide me from myself. So what do we do with this notion of authority? It's a really important notion. It's dogged us human beings from the beginning of time, I suspect. Well, I think a reasonable way to begin to approach this is to say, what do I see as authoritative in my life? Not something that somebody else has screamed onto my head. But I, in the depths of my existence, to what do I ascribe authority? That is non-alienated, that is non-extrinsic. So I've been fretting over this all week, and I have two modest suggestions. Authority, if it is truly an interior fact, has to be an appeal to what is best in me, to my hopes, to my humanization. Two major instances of that, I think. Telling the truth. There's not much of it, especially if you watch much TV. Your brain will be all bent out of shape. $8,000 for a seat at the Super Bowl. My God, if that's not cockamamie. I truly do not know. But people are paying me. They're probably half drunk when they get there after their tailgate party, but nevertheless, you know, I was there. So you can go back home to Keokuk, Iowa and say, yeah, I was there. Didn't you see me? I was there. Come on. Telling the truth is not something that is imposed on me. It is something, at least in my experience, and I think this is generally the case with us human beings, it is something that emerges from who we are, upon which my humanization depends. What's wrong with lying? It's dehumanizing. That's what's wrong with lying. It makes me less human. And we all know this. We are less human when we lie to somebody. We are less ourselves. Try it. Go think about it at home. And the other form of authority, again, comes from some interior state of being a human being, which is to want to be loved. I don't know anybody on this planet who does not want to be loved, except for those strange, unfortunate cases where they've been so deprived of love, they just want to get back at the world. And to some extent, that's present in all of us, I think. Because we're not loved as we think we should be loved. But there's nothing, and this should be clear to everybody, that so humanizes me as being loved. That so liberates me. And freedom is of the essence here, you know. If I have to go around watching for what the bishop is going to say, as we church people frequently do, more often than not, I'm afraid, that's alienative. I put it to you, that's alienative. That behavior is not going to give me an authentic appropriation of my own humanity. It's going to deprive me of it. It's going to locate it someplace above. Always above, of course. So all this stuff came to me. Jesus was just a hillbilly. Come on. Jesus was a hillbilly. He grew up in northern Palestine. He was a workman, you know. He didn't glow. It didn't sparkle when people came in. Oh, said, oh my God, it's Jesus. Oh. No, I said. As one of the boys here. So what was it? How does this thing work? When they say Jesus taught with authority. Well, I make this proposition that it means that people who heard him recognized the deepest desires of their own humanization and responded to it without fear, without threat, without alienation. Except alienation in a very strange and peculiar fashion. I mean, the bishop can give me orders and I say, oh my God, here we go again, you know. Or if somebody loves me, I can feel inadequate to that. They're loving the person I would like to be, not the person I am. And that's what love does. Love liberates us. I mean, those of our parents, and we're all pretty bad at the job, at least in my experience. That's what parenting is supposed to do. It's supposed to be a genuine act of love. And we all sort of muddle around about that and lose it often. My way is the highway. Yeah. That's the form of authority that we experience from our bosses, from our bishops, from our politicians, and in more subtle ways from the advertisers. You're not real if you don't smell this way. You're not real if your hair doesn't flop in the wind, you know, like you're under a fan. You're not real if you drive this kind of car, if you don't drive this kind of car. You're not real. I mean, that's why it's, advertising is so pernicious. It's constantly offering us surrogate forms of our own humanity and saying, what you really need to be a human being is to use this kind of deodorant. And then everybody will love you, of course. So we can be reasonably safe, I think, that in the presence of Jesus, these deepest impulses, more than impulses, desires in us, to be truthful, to be loved and to be loving, he brought people to respond in that way because they saw him as that kind of person. You know, he was authoritative in that way, evoking the best of me. You know, not imposing, evoking, calling forth. You know. And that's really important because we live in a world and a church where we're hidebound by laws, millions of laws. The Code of Canon Law, last time I checked, runs to 1,300. Laws. And God knows we've always been known as a church of law and order. You know, thanks to our Roman heritage, largely. You know, that's not authority. That's alienation. That's what, again, I keep every day, I get up and look at these pictures of Francis. Like, my God! That's what it's all about. Francis, who wants a messy church. Who doesn't want people who to walk in lockstep order. He wants a messy church. He wants argument. He wants debate. And debate is authentic only when it originates in me. Not because of somebody telling me, this is what you ought to think, Trogai. Or this is how you ought to behave, Trogai. Otherwise, religion is a vast and ghastly mistake, folks. We're selling our souls for a mess of pottage, as the Bible said. We're not becoming more human. We're becoming less human often enough. And this is very hard because our society is built on a series of legislative moves that are imposed on us. And the reason I'm going this direction is very simple. The word authority comes from a Latin verb, augere, augeo, augere. Auctus, auctus. Past participle of augere, if anybody's interested in that picky stuff. What does it mean then? To be an authority. The word augere means to grow, to help to grow. That's what it means. So an authority, as I've been trying to say earlier on, is a voice that helps me to grow, a presence, a space in which I'm invited to grow beyond myself. Toward my truer, more honest self, you know, not to some hokey simulacrum of, you know, reality or the real Trojan. So we need to read these gospel texts with a view to asking simple, what does that mean that he taught with authority? The Jews don't have central authority. They have the scribal class, who are a bunch of lawyers. All due deference to lawyers among us. But they constituted the 613 precepts of the law. Think about it. Let me give you an example. So in the Decalogue, in the Ten Commandments, there is, you know, you should not work on the Sabbath. So one of the Pharisaic laws was that the sheep, I've never been to Palestine, I don't have any particular desire to go, but the sheep in Palestine have, I'm told, these great, huge, fat tails. Therefore, every Sabbath Eve, before the Sabbath began, all the farmers were supposed to pick up little wagons and stick them on the rear end of the sheep so they did not have to carry their tails, because that would be a violation of the Sabbath. We're not much further than that, folks, so far as I can see. You can eat, famously, an ounce of hamburger on Fridays in the old days. That was a venial sin. You ate 2 ounces and you were hell-bent, literally hell-bent. It's called casuistry, I believe. That's not liberative. So we have to do, and this again, thanks to Francis, who's beginning to sound like Jesus, much to his danger, I'm afraid. I'm not going to judge homosexual people. I'm going to marry people who've been cohabiting for a long time. You know, and he's done all that stuff. I'm going to set up public showers in the Bernini Colonnade, ruining that great Renaissance masterpiece. For the sake of human beings who smell bad and can't get hotel rooms to deodorize themselves. That's why we should pray every day for his long life and for his survival, and in gratitude that for the first time in my lifetime since the papacy of John the 23rd, I'm hearing what sounds like something that's coming out of the Gospels.